Good morning, good afternoon, or good night. I'm your host, Adrian Conway. Welcome to another episode of Rise and Pod. We are officially amidst the 2024 CrossFit Games season. It is Wednesday, March 6th, as I sit down to record this episode. And my thoughts are simply that at the conclusion of scoring, submission, and validation, I'm going to jump on here and do some feedback, do some review. I'm going to talk through what I thought about the test of 24.1, where I'm seeing that most of the sticking points came from, how they were potentially training faults for people, and even approach in training faults for people. So it doesn't mean just what you're doing, but how you're doing it, and how the Open tends to traditionally, year in and year out, give us feedback on where our limitations are. So I'm going to jump right into this thing with no further ado. 24.1, I'll pull it up here and put it on the screen if you guys are watching this on the YouTubes. But it was dumbbell snatches on a single arm and lateral bar burpees. Now, this was a very unique test in the way that we'd done single arm snatches before, never really having been forced to do them for a set rep range on one arm consecutively unbroken. So that was a bit of a unique stimulus. I think the vast majority of us practice them, whether it be heavy or at high volume, a lot of times with the inclusion of the skill of transitioning the dumbbell from hand to hand, whether you choose to do it overhead, in front of your face, or below your waist. A lot of times we're rotating arms each and every rep. There was a bit of a unique stimulus here. Now, the workout overall was 21 snatches on one arm, on arm one, then 21 lateral burpees over the dumbbell, 21 dumbbell snatches on arm two, then 21 lateral burpees over the dumbbell. That did it for your 21s. Then 15 snatches on arm one, 15 burpees, 15 snatches on arm two, 15 burpees. That did your round of 15, then 9 snatches on arm one, 9 burpees, 9 snatches on arm two, 9 burpees, and done and time. Now, we have seen people do this workout in sub 6 minutes. In fact, I believe the worldwide leader for this particular test was none other than Colton Mertens, who finished in 5:19. An absolutely amazing, blistering time. Taylor Self came in at 5:40, and there were some people right there nipping at his heels at 5:41 and 5:42, and Thomas Stroyer and Colin Bouchard. Now, on the female side, which is as expected, we saw a generally overall slower time output. Now, it wasn't by a ton, but by the masses. So there are going to be some outliers on the female side that, of course, went sub 6 minutes. But for the most part, many of the women, even the fittest in the world, were over 6 minutes. Now, the reason I say that we expected this is because when you look at these movements and understand that this burpee is certainly the timekeeper in this workout, meaning that yes, you can cycle, increase the cycle speed of the dumbbell by being more violent or more explosive on the up and the down and being a shorter framed athlete, which I'll get to in just a moment. But most of this workout was dictated by the way that you attack the burpees. The burpee, in my opinion, is a plyometric version of a push-up, particularly done this way, right? There was very little skill involved and or distance that needed to be covered in regards to how tall you stood for the burpee or how far you had to jump for the burpee that was relatively set for each and every human. So what this turned into was how fast could you get down and how fast could you get your hands off the ground again? And the stronger pound for pound that an athlete is, or more explosive pound for pound that they could be and sustain that type of tempo, that's what rewarded them in having a faster time in this workout for the most part. Now, I said that I'd get to it in a moment, and that moment is now. If you were a shorter athlete, this workout favored you. No, there's no doubt about it. But equally, you had to have the ability to smash the gas pedal down and keep it down until you finish that ninth and final burpee in the final round. Now, the biggest keys for people here to have success, the cues that I wrote up in my warm-up preparation, in my video debrief, once I saw the workout get announced and I saw the athletes navigating through it, were very simple. You wanted to be smooth and efficient on the dumbbell snatch. For people who did the dumbbell snatch and wanted to cycle it even faster, they had to be careful not to reach the dumbbell behind their center of mass when they made contact with the ground. So a lot of times it's very natural and easy to treat this dumbbell snatch single arm, in such a way where you would almost treat it like a kettlebell swing. So you want to exaggerate the hinge, soften the knees, allow the momentum of the dumbbell to carry itself behind you, closer to your heels with the head of the dumbbell than the midfoot or the front of your foot. The reason that this could be an error is because it adds fractions of a second to every single rep that you do. When you're doing 90 of anything in a workout and you're fighting for the fastest time possible, you need to be conscious of where you can make up time anytime, meaning that even if you start your round of 21s and you do 42 snatches, 21 on each arm, with the dumbbell slightly more forward of the midfoot and the front of your foot so that it's traveling more in a straight line instead of an arc, that would have been beneficial to you. And then after fatigue sets in, maybe you're blown up, maybe you're breathing hard, maybe you can focus less on the way that you execute the dumbbell and the focus needs to be more on just getting the reps done. And then it starts to travel a little bit further back towards your heel. Well, that's okay, because at least you maximized in the first 42 reps, which will result in an overall faster time, no doubt about it. So that was one thing in regards to how you cycle the dumbbell. The other thing with the burpee, and of course this was our predominant means of having a faster time, was that you wanted to keep your hands as close to the ground as possible. Yes, it benefits athletes to stay bent over, but that bent over feeling can be very elusive. And what I mean by that is there were plenty of athletes who cued themselves and intended to stay hinged over. When they went back to watch their video, because their focus wasn't on keeping their hands low and close to the dumbbell where you can literally see every rep, and they just went by feeling with where their torso position was, they started to see that as fatigue built, they commonly started to stand a little bit more. Sometimes athletes could feel reprieve there. They could take a second. It allowed their lower back to respond just a touch less with a little bit more of that physiological burn that we all experienced from being bent over so much and so long. An even slight reprieve in the lower body as they could open their hip and kind of get a little taller. So my cue to people was hands as low as possible, as long as possible, meaning that throughout the entire workout, the goal is, yes, to pop up off the ground, whether you choose to step up the burpee with a lunge or you hop both feet up toward your hands, the goal is to keep your hands low so that you get to the ground quickly. The next focus on the burpee was to simply flop. I know that not everyone has the ability to redirect themselves quickly off the ground. The bottom line, though, is that we all have the ability to choose to flop on the ground. Some will argue this, but this is a competition. By all means necessary, we are trying to find the way to get done as fast as possible. So what that means is that we will start to throw some technical aspects and focuses that I might not encourage the everyday member to go through and do. But if you're chasing this on an elite level, you need to learn to experiment outside of the box, and you also need to learn where the juice is worth the squeeze. And there's no better place to learn these things than in the CrossFit Open. So for the athletes, and a lot of times this was the differentiator between men and women, was that many men had the audacity or the ability to flop to the ground and explode up quickly. Women would place their hands on the ground, then lower their body, not with a ton of control, but with enough control that it would slow their rate of descending to the ground and create some undue fatigue also in the triceps, shoulders, and chest, and then redirect themselves off the ground. So if you place your hands down, then worm to the ground, then got back up, although you never stopped and although it felt fast, there was always a faster way. And it was the flop method, where your arms actually maybe not allowed your chest to hit first, but your hands being right beside your chest with your arms bent or slightly bent got you to the ground faster, therefore up faster if you kept your pace. So these were all considerations that were really important to make. Dumbbell placement on the snatch, how you cycled it. Were you fit enough to actually demand the dumbbell come down to the ground quicker? Not many people were for 90 reps. But again, what if you did it for the round of 21s and then you could hold on for the rest? It might have played out and been worth it for a faster time for you. How were you going to do the burpees? Were you going to step up or hop? That was open for discussion. I don't think that there was a particular way that was right or wrong. It was what was sustainable or what maximized time for you. But the non-negotiable was hands got to stay low to the dumbbell and to the ground each and every repetition if you want to be successful here. And then lastly, did you have the audacity, the bravery, or the consideration to flop to the ground versus hands down, chest down approach? Now, we saw Colton Mertens went 5:19. We've got Mirjam Van Roar, who went first on the female side with a time of 5:39. Her time is available to watch online if you see that. And of course, I've got it pulled up here. But the reason I bring up all this, folks, is because there's always lessons to take from the CrossFit Open. And the first one of the most important lessons that I think we take from 24.1 is that it pays to chase intensity. Now, for many elite athletes, they're now just really gearing up their intensity. They're gearing up their volume for the means to peak at semifinals. This is not how everyone can approach their training. Intensity should have been being met much more consistently from January 1 and beyond. And I say that in regards to, of course, you want to chase intensity throughout the year in different ways. If you're an experienced athlete and your training age is older, you've got to be more considerate about how often do you touch high intensity and how far do you push it. If you're newer to the sport, you've got to dabble in it more consistently because you've got to learn where your limitations are. You've got to learn, am I really leaning into the highest level of pain threshold that I can tolerate? Or is my mind telling me that I need to give up long before my body actually chooses to give up? Because inevitably, folks, 24.1 made you find the balance between the two. For me, I met it headlong entering my round of nines. I felt like I was holding on well through my 15s. And in the round of nines, I was getting to the point where I was actually questioning like if my legs could tolerate the way I was doing the burpee and still making it over the dumbbell. Like literally my thought was like, clear the dumbbell, because I felt like my legs were so heavy and the fatigue was so real that it wasn't going to happen for me. I would encourage you to understand that if you didn't have this sensation or feeling at some point in the latter part of that workout, if you weren't questioning if you could make it over the dumbbell, you probably didn't go hard enough. And yes, while it was uncomfortable for you and there was a state of great discomfort for you, you weren't at your physiological means of an end, right? You weren't there at the peak of your threshold. And that's the beauty of the Open. And that's the beauty, I think, of what Dave and Adrian are trying to embody in HQ, whoever else helps with programming, are trying to embody here with the next 3 weeks, is that skills might be demanded of us, but they're going to be on the lesser side right now. And it's going to be about moving and continually moving, even when you don't want to. So that's why a lot of us dread the Open, right? The pain tolerance is demanded of us at a very high level. The skill set typically is on the lower end, and the limitations that we run in are typically on the lower end. Now, we've had some different experiences over the past couple years. You know, I can think about workouts that had like the 1-10 and 10-1 ladder of deadlifts and bar facing burpees, where 225 and 155 were challenging enough loads that it slowed a lot of people down due to overall strength and local muscle stamina. I can think of last year, the snatch and handstand pushup workout. A lot of people felt like, wow, I couldn't get very far. And that was because of specific limitations. 24.1 was nothing like that, folks. It was what you were willing to do from a psychological and physiological standpoint, how you navigated your personal limitations, and did you have a good mindset and approach going into the workout? So it wasn't that you could find an easy way out here. There was nowhere to go except down and up. And the skill set was very low. Now, I've gotten a lot of questions. Adrian, was it limited by your aerobic capacity? Were people's ability to replenish their red blood cells and or sustain a zone 3, zone 4 or zone 4, zone 5 approach the dictator here? And my answer to that is no. In fact, I think that the fastest athletes in the world were some of the shorter. So of course there's an advantage there, but also some of the most explosive and fast moving athletes in the world in our sport. And I say that because contraction speed mattered here, right? When you go back and you watch someone like Chandler Smith or Noah Olsen or Colton Mertens or Taylor Self, Dallin Pepper do this workout, they're not just moving through the reps. It's not a question of if they're going to go unbroken. It's how fast can they go unbroken, even with the dumbbell? Where does the dumbbell make contact? Are they redirecting it as fast as possible? Was that a good rep? Was that a bad rep? And I don't mean by a good rep or a no rep. I mean a good rep or a bad rep timing-wise. Folks, there's even a sequence of operations that take place when you properly tap the dumbbell with both heads and redirect it quickly. It almost feels like there was no work being done, versus sometimes that dumbbell hits the ground faster than you thought because either your torso was rotated more, or your butt was lower, or your hips were higher, and you almost have to do more work on those reps. These athletes were fast and they were accurate and they were also reckless, and reckless by the point of knowing their threshold, but coming out fast enough to the point where there's no question they were going to have to slow down at some point, but it wasn't going to be by choice. It was going to be by them starting to slow but while still trying to go all out and as fast as possible. So I think these are things that are important to understand. But yes, conditioning overall for an everyday athlete played a role. For the athletes at the highest level, a lot of it was who strategized it appropriately and really who was willing to die early and just hang on for the latter parts of the workout. So it wasn't something that you could just move through. This wasn't a rich, Froning, smooth workout. And when I say that, all due respect to the GOAT, I think that he always has had the unique ability to move smooth and fast and never slow. This was more of like pedal to the metal, which always I saw Matt Frazier have a very unique ability to do when it was time, and ride or die. And I think very much the athletes who were able to execute that and show that in this test, it was the case. So how do we improve here is a question that I want you guys to be able to answer when you leave listening to this podcast or watching it wherever you are. So my advice for you going forward is remember this feeling. Remember the feeling of intensity. If you're new to CrossFit and you're just kind of dabbling, but you're geeking out on this the way that I did when I first found out what CrossFit was, you've got to be able to actually lean into this feeling. But you don't want to do it too often. So yes, the intensity piece that you felt, that like undeniable and unfamiliar feeling of like, wow, I think I might either pee my pants, poop my pants, or throw up. That's something that you got to touch that periodically, but you can't do it too often because it'll burn you out. And you've got to also spend a healthy amount of time building your strength and building your skills for the sport so that when those things are coupled and they're met with intensity, you have the capacity to do those things well while you're experiencing these physiological sensations that are oh so fantastic. So it's a fine balance in how you approach it. If you don't know how to do that, I clearly offer a wide array of programs online at ttrufitness.com, truefitness.com, where we've got 9 live programs that fit anybody's needs, to be quite frank. And that goes from the top level competitor and our true competitor to someone who likes to train like a competitor in true competitor pro, where you get the training all the way sandwiched down into 60 to 90 minutes of training. Even if you want to train like a semifinal caliber athlete, but you don't have the time to put in 4 hours a day or 3 hours a day. And then we've got programs that even range from 60 minutes of work to 30 minutes of work to dumbbells only to body weight only. So feel free to dabble. If you're watching this on YouTube, of course, there's a QR code you can scan and kind of jump into the app and get 7 days free and browse around and snoop around. So feel free to take part in that. But what does this look like going forward? Folks, I think that you have to understand that it's not just what you do, it's how you do it. And you need to take this lesson. So touch intensity periodically. You need to think about rep contraction speed. And I don't know if this is taught at the affiliate level and how important it is. But folks, you don't want to just be able to do thrusters and have a thruster speed. You want to be able to do thrusters at an all-out tempo where you lock that bar out and piston it and pull it back down into your clavicle or into your throat, and then you cycle it properly into the bottom of that squat and get out of the hole as fast as you can. That means you've got to train at all-out speed sometimes with very light to minimal loads. That's how it's refined. That's how it's learned. You've got to also be able to grind with heavy weight. Right. And I say that on the opposite end of the spectrum, but don't forget those things. But I would say that the vast majority of the affiliates out there programming, the athletes doing their own individual program or following a training template, they're not getting touches in optimal and high speed with light to low weights enough. You've got to feel it. You've got to feel the accuracy. You've got to feel the contraction speed, and you've got to be able to train faster in short sprinty style workouts and maximize your rest sometimes. This is where there's real value, is that then you know what you can tolerate when it's 21, 21, 21, 21, 15, 15, 15, 15, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9. Dave Castro does this announcement for week 2, and it's going to be now thrusters and toes to bar at the same type of, right? Maybe it's a single dumbbell, toes to bar, single dumbbell, toes to bar, right? Like, I don't know. I'm guessing. But again, with any combination of movements, we've got to be able to dabble and experiment with the different speed and velocities of the contractions, and of course, the different loads. So be mindful of that as you guys take this into your training. I think I want to give everybody a charge to, when you, this isn't, you can't have just workout speed. There's got to be competition speed. And that takes a bravery, and that takes an audacity to trust your training. But it should transform the way that you prepare going forward. If you feel like week 1 of the 2024 CrossFit Open kicked you in the teeth, you've got to question then the way that you've been preparing. And you might be on an amazing program, but what about the intensity that you bring? Remember, it's not what you do, it's how you do it. And if the how you do things aligns very well with what you are doing, and you consider things like, man, how 24.1 made you feel, well, you've got to be able to feel that in training periodically. And you've got to be able to grind in your training periodically. But the whole point is that it comes to a peak and an apex to seize the moment when the lights are bright, when the judge is beside you, or when you're surrounded by your peers and it's time to throw down and then post a score to CrossFitGames.com with that means something just a little more than posting to the leaderboard at your affiliate. So I want you guys to keep in mind, this is competition, and this can stress us out, but this can also teach us the most lessons about not just our fitness, not just our training, but also our self-character. Where do you shrink away? Where do you lean in? Where do you struggle? Take notes of these things and be aware of them over the next 2.5 weeks, because whether you choose to compete in quarterfinals, you advance to semifinals, or if you go to the CrossFit Games and win them, you can be a better human because of the way that we train, because of the way that we compete each and every day within the CrossFit community. And to me, that's why the methodology wins. That's why the methodology is superior to each and every other pursuit that exists, is because that we demand that you stay present in your training. We demand that you learn new skills and drills on a regular basis. We demand that you do chase intensity, but understand that all of that is based on your psychological and physiological tolerances. It's all based on you. What you walk in to the gym that day with, your stress levels, your family life, the way your knees feel, the way your hips feel. Yeah, we want you to maximize your intensity, but that's going to look very different for you on Monday than it will on Thursday. And we want to teach you those things. We don't want everything to be completely black and white in this methodology. Everybody in the world wants their methodology to be black and white. Well, you said high intensity. Yeah, but that's with the understanding of what high intensity means and where high intensity is actually fruitful and beneficial and not ignorant or destructive. So that's why I think CrossFit is the best thing out there, is because it does take mind, it does take body, and it does take even a bit of the connection to soul. If you're a coach out there and you don't feel like you wear this type of hat or wear this type of responsibility, don't own a gym, don't program workouts, and don't oversee the development of athletes, because you don't really understand what you're getting yourself into or how to guide them through that journey. So I'm going to get up my soapbox, folks, but I want to encourage you that if you're going into week 2 and week 3 of the Open, learn from week 1. Touch intensity 1 or 2 days that you felt like you experienced in the Open in your training on a regular basis, so that way you get kicked in the teeth a little bit less and you'll be more prepared to optimally perform. I'm going to leave you with this. How does that intensity and that kick in the teeth reflect you as an individual? And what does that mean for your everyday life? Do you ever feel that you might shy away from hard choices or hard discussions or hard tasks in the business place, at home, at work? Are you the type of person that puts off things like doing the laundry when you could do it right now, like making your bed when you could make it right now, like doing that class assignment and putting it off to do something fun or do something that feels a little bit better when you could do it right now? Because to me, this is always about more than fitness. This is always about more than the stuff that's happening in the gym. And I think that we can all come out better versions of ourselves on the other side of this. But hey, that's a wrap for 24.1. I gave you my synopsis, I gave you my thoughts, and I gave you some advice on moving forward. We're going to do the same thing next week, team. In the meantime, keep your head up. Tomorrow, we're going to find out what 24.2 is. And remember, it's going to shake up the leaderboard no matter what it is. Trust Mr. Castro, trust Mr. Bosman on their ability to express fitness at large and allow it to reflect the most well-rounded athletes in the world. And most importantly, keep rising.